Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Our kids, or many kids, well, not mine because they're at home with me in quarantine, have started school. And I guess it's one of the things that we always worry about as parents is who our children's friends are. So it's obviously natural if we're friends with a family and they have kids of a similar age that our kids might be friendly with them, or they might not. You can't really push these things too much. But is it possible to choose our kids' friends? And if so, how do we go about doing that? It's quite a scary thing as a parent, especially as your kids get older. You know, when they're in the younger years, it's really just it's social and it's convenient. But when they get older and there are real, very, very real influences within the friend group, it does become a much bigger concern. Dr. Leonard Kahn is a clinical psychologist. We've spoken to him many times before. We wanted to ask him this question. How do we assist our children in choosing their friends wisely? Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Very well, thanks. And you, Howard?
Yeah, I am good. Thank you for asking. So it's quite a scary thing because we want to control. It's quite natural for us to want to control who our kids are friendly with, but it often doesn't work that way. How do we go about allowing them to make the choices that hopefully will be good for them?
So first of all, and part of the answer is in your question, because I think especially Jewish parents tend to micromanage and helicopter parents.
Who
us? In actual,
I'm shocked to hear that.
I'm sure you've never encountered it in your life.
never. I've never even heard of such a thing.
So the thing is, and I see this a lot, of adults, actually particularly young women, who are indecisive, who cannot make a decision without asking their mother, from the most trivial to the most important. So actually, the answer is that you need to help your children to cultivate self-awareness and to empower them to make their own choices. For example, if they're in a toxic interaction with another child, ask them, how does that make you feel? What was it about that interaction that made you feel that way? How could you have reacted differently? Is this the way you want to feel in a friendship? So, you know, that would be with regard to actual friends. But there's a step before that. And the step before that is how you interact with a child. And that means teaching the child about boundaries. And the way to teach a child about boundaries is to respect the child's boundaries and to know the difference, for example, between giving guidance and micromanaging them, or, you know, giving them choices versus controlling them.
So could you give us an example of how that would manifest?
Well, you know, if you think of what parents do to disqualify a child's experience, stop crying. If you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about. Or you're overreacting,
right,
you're hypersensitive,
right,
and put on a jersey, it's cold, and eat something, you must be hungry. Don't eat something, you've had enough. There are a myriad of ways that parents dominate and control children as opposed to helping children to make their own choices. You know, you could say, are you feeling cold? You know, because it's possible that a child could be cold and it just doesn't occur to them to put on a jersey. Some adults too. So by asking questions and help the child to reflect on their experience, and also to take a child's feelings and expressions of need and protest seriously. You know, I mean, we're busy. Obviously, there's a massive discussion about sexual abuse because of the Chaim Walder case.
Yes.
And even things when you're watching a small child, ask for consent, you know? Do you mind if I wash your body? Do you mind if I do this? Not because the child does mind or because it's a problem, but you're instilling the idea that the child has power, they have consent. They understand the concept of consent because when children get into unhealthy relationships with friends, it is always a playing out of dynamics in the home. You know, a needy child will always be trying to please and put their needs second, and that child becomes a love magnet for a self-centered, dominating child. You know, and
yeah, that is so interesting because that is something we see so often playing out. And I know from our experience, one of the difficult things is trying to balance that your child's needs versus maybe a child who is difficult and wants to be a friend, and your child doesn't want to hurt them, and you don't want your child to be unkind, but balancing that kindness with their own, with protecting themselves and not allowing themselves to be either taken advantage of or compromised too much. And some compromise is obviously important.
Right. So first of all, remember that, and this applies to nasty teachers as well, by allowing the child to have these difficult experiences, you're giving them the opportunity to learn about people and life and relationships and to draw on their own inner resources and to develop ways to deal with it. So if you micromanage them and you protect them, you are robbing them of the opportunity to develop the skills and the strategies and the self-awareness to deal with life later when things get really toxic. But in more direct answer to your question, the message that you need to give a child is that it's wonderful to have the quality of kindness or loyalty or compassion. Wonderful and very important, but you are equally deserving of that quality. And so whatever quality you choose to make other people the beneficiary of, make sure that you're also the beneficiary of that quality. Because you cannot be kind to someone else while you're being cruel to yourself. And you'll notice that that is often the case, that people are so self-sacrificing in the name of kindness that they cause themselves physical and emotional damage. They wear themselves out or they expose themselves to people who are toxic. And so these are the seeds, the messages that you have to implant in a child that empower them to deal with the world in an effective way and make the right choices.
And we see this in adults as well,
in an unhappy situation, even to let them run with it a bit until they wake up and realize this is not working for me.
Yeah, because it does carry through to adulthood. We perpetuate the same behavior as adults where we don't really know what those, or we don't put up the boundaries that protect ourselves.
Right, because you never stop being the person that you were as a child. And that's why the time to teach children these lessons is when they are in the little laboratory of the young family or the school, the kindergarten. That's the laboratory. That's where children experiment and learn. And you have to facilitate and nurture those experiments and guide them, but also let them fall and let them experience discomfort. And then talk to them about how they could have more appropriately managed it.
There are certain kids that are a lot more empathetic and are much more sensitive to nuances of other people around them than others are. It's obviously child dependent on whether you need to be teaching the child or encouraging the child to be more empathetic, or perhaps not less empathetic, but understand where those boundaries are. I guess it is very, very child specific when it comes to these lessons.
You're 100% right. Because if you have a child who's lacking in empathy, and I mean, every child who's a bully is lacking in empathy, that child needs to be taught empathy, because the root of bullying is not having empathy and not having an appreciation of human dignity. On the other hand, a child who's very empathic is so guided by their empathy and their emotions that they're liable to make themselves open to being treated badly, because their empathy for the other person overrides their empathy for themselves.
Right.
And so some people need to be taught empathy for others, and some people need to be taught more empathy for themselves.
What's fascinating to me is that somehow, although we meant to include this in all forms of education, whether it's at school or at home, we don't actually have formal education around this. Shouldn't we be teaching things like this to our children, including recognizing body language? If there's in nursery or grade zero or grade one, if a child's sitting in the corner with arms folded, maybe if the other kids saw that, understood that folded arms, maybe they're looking a bit sad, maybe they could help. Why aren't we formalizing this?
Well, because we're backward, and we come from an
okay, that wasn't the answer I was expecting.
The world hasn't moved out of the industrial age fascist education system, you know, that prevailed when you and I were at school. No one's moved on, but most of school is redundant. You know, I mean, why aren't they teaching financial skills? Why aren't they teaching social skills, negotiation skills, relationship skills? Because these are the things that empower people through life, you know? And actually what they do is, criticism and control. And school itself is a vehicle for shutting children down very often.
Absolutely fascinating. They're gesticulating to me that I need to wrap this up. Okay. I can read that body language very, very clearly. Leonard Carr, thank you. I could talk to you for hours.
Thank you, Howard.
But I'm not allowed to do that. Thank you, as always, talking about assisting our kids in terms of friendship.